the Demeter, on charter from Romania to London. Shipping private crates, contents unknown. Out at sea with no land in sight.
This here is Clemens. He's a doctor.
You dress like a learned man.
University of Cambridge. I know my way around a boat.
Our charter has agreed to pay a bonus for timely arrival in London.
Let me show you the ship. This here is Huckleberry. We don't come with like this to give the oars clear.
Demeter's a fine boat, no doubt.
Something ripped apart the elements.
All the livestock?
This looks like a bite.
Search the ship. Everywhere.
Evil is on board. Powerful evil.
Hello, faithful viewers. Welcome back to the Every Day is Halloween podcast. I am your host, Horror Guy Keenan. I have a little something new today. We're going to be doing a double feature episode. It's an episode I want to do, go back to movies, talk about a little what's coming out in the fall season. And I have two that really stuck out for me this year. Kind of late summer films, that kind of get tossed to the side. Films that usually don't perform very well in theaters, but I thought they performed great for me, and I want to share them with you all. So now that they're both streaming on VOD and all those places, you can watch them right after this episode. So if you're driving to work, this might give you something to look forward to whenever you get home, cuddle up with the husband or wifey, and enjoy a spooky movie before Halloween. So let's get to it. My first picture that I want to talk about is The Last Voyage of the Demeter. This is a tale that was from Bram Stoker's Dracula that obviously reads perfectly for a movie. Dracula is being sent from Transylvania to London in a coffin of sorts. Many boxes. They're like big wooden crates, shipping crates, and they're getting sent from Transylvania to London. So basically his birthplace to where he'll feed, and you know the rest of the story. But this is cool. This is a neat take, because this is the side of Dracula that we don't really ever get to see. This is a side of Dracula that's a bit more vicious or more brutal. He almost looks like Nosferatu. But it's one of those things that as Dracula feeds, he regains his true form, if you'd say. So most of the picture you're getting a Dracula that is feral and just monstrous. This is a monster movie picture, and that's my favorite kind of horror right there, is a monster movie that takes itself very seriously, that has a gas lamp gothy feel to it. And this film just it's Alien on the High Seas. Like, how do you not want to watch that, right? This film is directed by Andre Overdahl. You might remember his movies, Autopsy of Jane Doe, which takes place entirely in a morgue. I really loved this movie. Brian Cox and Emile Hirsch were in this film, and these are two actors that I feel don't ever really get a lot of recognition. So to see Andre really take their talents and hone them to the highest degree was wonderful. If you haven't seen Autopsy of Jane Doe, I highly recommend checking that out. He's also worked on Troll Hunter, which was a found footage type film, which was really neat, very different at the time when it released. That one, I think, is streaming right now on Netflix. Another one of his films is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Obviously, depicted after the book series. That one ran a little too long for me. I really love the premise. I really love the look of it, but I feel like it's just very long in the tooth, if you know what I mean. I would love to see a tighter cut of that picture someday. But we're not talking about this movie. We're talking about The Last Voyage of the Demeter. That's just kind of setting the scene for what, how he operates and works as a director. And, you know, he never does anything very half-assed, and you always get just this beautiful cinematography in anything he ever works on. And that's one thing about Demeter that's just really striking to me, is that the world that it lends itself to is just gorgeous. You can never really tell the budget of this film because it's so grand and hidden within practical effects and just amazing acting from everybody that's in this film. Let's talk about those players. So you have your lead actor, Corey Hawkins. They really work his character very well into the Demeter and why he would not be on the ship and how he does get onto the ship. Our female lead, Aisling Francisco, I probably slaughtered that. She's wonderful as well. And then the captain, Lemmy Cunningham, you might know from Game of Thrones. He was the man who was looking after Daenerys and started turning dragon scale. He plays an amazing captain in this movie, and his turmoils that lead him to go slightly more, like, it's always interesting to see the person that you know your captain, he's the strength of the ship, and when you start seeing that character start to lose its threads and become unraveled, it's like, well, no one's safe because everybody's losing their mind, including the captain. And he has a very good story. But I definitely want to give a shout out to Everyday is Halloween podcast fan and comic book creator David Dasmalshin. He's amazing in this movie. David's one of those guys that you can put in any kind of role and he just makes magic happen. You can't typecast this guy. And I know you've all seen him before. The first time I think I ever really saw David was when he was in The Dark Knight as one of the Joker's kind of like henchmen. And he just has that striking look. You know, David's, he's very cunning. And the great thing in the real life, he's like the sweetest guy in the world. But he shows up in this and he plays a completely different character, kind of like the sidearm to the captain, you know, the strength of the ship that, you know, if anything's going awry or out of control, he's the one put in charge, and kind of almost like a heavy, you know, kind of like your muscle. And, not a role I would really pick for David, but man, he knocks it out of the park. And again, just shows that Andre just knows what he's talking about. And I mean, David can do any role he wants, man. He's done it all, and he's doing it all this year. He's having a great 2023. I'm so proud of him. But yeah, he's like definitely one of the stronger moments of this picture. This film has a nice budget. It has this tragic tale. There were scenes in this film that I did not see coming, that I thought were just very cool and very, you know, risk-taking moments for a film like this. And that's what movies are all about, is, you know, you start kind of maybe getting bored with the story, and then something grasps you, something epic happens in the storyline to keep pulling you in. And this film does that. Obviously, it's Dracula lost on a ship. So things keep getting eaten or taken down one by one. And it has that great feel, like, obviously on a ship, so he only could be in so many places. But the ship's just big enough that, you know, he could be hiding anywhere. This film does a lot of really good work with practical effects, as well as it blends it with CGI. Now, for me, the CGI at times could be a little jarring, just because I hate when CGI takes me out of a practical effect film. But I understand if you are having a giant winged Dracula man bat flying around the ship in the stormy night sky, You can't do that all that practical. So, you know, I give it, you know, a pass. There's just times where I feel like maybe the film might have been too dark and they lightened up the contrast, so you get this kind of gray wash over the CGI whenever you see it. A little disappointing, but I mean, whatever, man. It's the film is still solid, so it didn't really jar me too much. You just get to see a side of Dracula that you never really get to see. You know, we always see the well-dressed man that's seducing men and women alike. And this is just, we're getting that early side of Dracula, and it's just so vicious. And that's just a smart movie, too. I will say all up until the ending. I loved this movie up until the very end, because I feel like it tries to do something with the movie and turn it into a franchise. And I don't need a franchise out of this. Like, it can be a one and done. And I wonder, because this film has been in development hell forever. I think this script has been tossed around since 2000, 2001 in Hollywood, and it's had directors come on and actors come on and leave and come back. Some are even amazed that this film actually got made and put out there, you know, in a time where we're getting, you know, superhero movies left and right, and everything has to be a giant Avatar picture to get you in theaters, to have this script that's been kicking around in Hollywood forever and just be a vicious Dracula on a boat film, actually make it out into theaters, just makes me so happy. Like, give me more of these like one-off monster movies, especially like ones that are, you know, representing one of the coolest monsters of all time. I mean, it's Universal doing Dracula. This isn't you know, a side story Dracula story. This is Universal Pictures doing Dracula. This is the home that built horror. But that's to say, like, what is Universal doing with their monster movies? I feel like they don't know. I think that's another reason why I love this picture so much, is that we got that Alex Kurtzman mummy movie with Tom Cruise that was god awful, trying to strike off the dark universe. And we got Nicolas Cage as Dracula in Renfield. Both of these were from Universal Pictures, and it was just like Universal's just spinning the wheels, trying to hold on to their characters and keep using them in their pictures. You know what I mean? Like, they don't really know what to do with their classic monsters, so they're just making these like one-off films. So this is another one of those. And I feel like Demeter was probably one of those films that was an idea for the Dark Pictures. For those of you who don't know what the Dark Pictures are, they were going to make a Marvel universe for the Universal Monsters. Yeah, that didn't happen. Right after Tom Cruise's mummy bombed, they decided to stop all that. But this film feels too good for that, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like they probably were like working on it and had the scripts ready, and they're just like, I don't know, like, this film will dumb that down. Now, there was a Dracula film that came out before the Tom Cruise mummy movie, which was called Dracula Untold. And like, that was supposed to be like, people were asking, was that part of the Dark Universe? And Universal was just like, yeah, totally, sure. Like, it was another one of those, like, we just need to make a Dracula movie. We don't really know how to work this into our universe. But if you all think that that's part of the mythos, yeah, we could work that in. So I imagine there was probably discussions about trying to work this in, and it just doesn't, you know, this is a good one and done visceral Dracula film that doesn't get too complicated. You know what I mean? Like, it's people on a boat going from one location to another, and Dracula's killing them off one by one. There are moments where Dracula, when he kills people, kind of like smirks, and I thought that was kind of fun. Because you don't really, we're not really getting like a, you know, a poetic Dracula here. He's not telling us fun tales. This Dracula is here to rip your throat out and move on. But you still got this like little bit of charm that, you know, it's still the Dracula that we know and love underneath that, and he's just enjoying himself, and it shows off very well in this. So yeah, I just really like this movie, The Last Voyage of the Demeter. Check it out right now from Universal Pictures, streaming everywhere. Well, not everywhere, but you know, $20 on Vudu or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah, I'd give this film I give it 4 stars out of 5. Definitely well worth it. Well worth your time. We just need to see more monster movies in theaters. That's why I went and go see it in theaters, because you know, I just want to like represent that. The classic monster movie in theaters, especially the good ones, you know. I always see the bad ones, so it was nice to see a good one in theaters for once. Like what you're hearing on the podcast, music-wise? Well, that's because it's from Midnight Syndicate, and this is their new album, The Brimstone Club. You can get that now over at midnightsyndicate.com, along with all their other albums. These are all albums that are soundtracks for all the big theme park attraction haunts, including Halloween Horror Nights. They'll also be at Cedar Point doing their live show this Halloween, so go check that out as well, and I think you can also get the album there. Stay scary. Up next is a film that I think I might have to say is my favorite horror movie I've seen this year in theaters. Overall, honestly. Not a lot of really good horror movies this year, honestly. I'm trying to really reach. Let's get some, like, cool, you know, independent ones. But there was a movie that came out from A24 called Talk to Me. And I thought that was my favorite horror movie of the year. But then I sat down and watched this film, and it blew me away. I'm talking about Cobweb.
It's okay. It was just a bad dream. I heard it again.
No more nightmares tonight. Okay, champ?
Daddy!
This is getting ridiculous.
This is an old house. There's bound to be bumps in the night. Beautiful imagination.
It's going to get you into trouble one day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't know how many of you have watched it yet, but this film is so fun and so good. It's directed by Samuel Bodin, and it stars Lizzie Kaplan from Mean Girls. I don't know if you remember Lizzie Kaplan. She was also in Misery, or I'm sorry, not Misery. She played Annie Wilkins. Was it Annie Wilkins in Misery? Yeah. In the Hulu series Castle Rock, season two, there was a... Castle Rock is a story about all the Stephen King books. They all get their own, like, full-on, like, backstories. And Lizzie plays her in this... her backstory, basically. If you saw Misery, she plays, like, a young Annie Wilkes. And she's just so good in this. And Lizzie Kaplan's one of those actresses that, like, you give her a role and she just really just chews the scenery up, and she's so good and captivating. And I always love seeing her get really good roles. In this movie, she gets one of her best roles ever. And who is she side up with? Anthony Starr, Homelander from The Boys. So these are your parents, right? This is a story where Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr are parents of this little boy, Peter, played by Woody Norman. And it's told like a very gothic fairy tale. It's set up so beautifully and just looks wonderful. And by the way, the whole film's set around Halloween time. The family has a pumpkin patch in their backyard for whatever reason. Nobody knows. It's just there. But man, does it look cool. There's even a scene like, you know, when Tommy Doyle gets knocked over in Halloween, he breaks his pumpkin. Like, they have that scene in there. Like, there's always like cute little nods to like Halloween. And I love that. This movie plays like a gothic fairy tale. And I want to see more of that in films. You can ruin that real fast by, you know, just going ham with your story and getting kind of cheesy. But this film really rides that fine line that like takes the material very seriously. And you just know, like, the kid's playing and at home or he's going to school and he talks to his parents and there's just something not right about them. It almost reminds you of Parents, the film with Randy Quaid. You know, there's just something not right with the folks. But you don't know. You're in the view of this kid and you're just going about the film and everything. And it starts unraveling itself and you find that there's something in the walls. And immediately for me, that's like the red flag, right? Like, okay, we're getting a Something in the Walls movie again. Is this Brahms the Boy? Like that movie, both those movies. Ugh, I hate those movies. Wasn't there another movie that came out recently that was like In the Walls? I forget. I don't know. They just keep making those movies. I always remember People Under the Stairs. That, to me, that's like the original People in the Walls movie. But this one kind of came out, so I was a little hesitant and a little skeptical about it. And I was like, all right, here we go. But man, this film does Creatures in the Walls good. And like I said, if you all know me, you know I'm a monster guy. And this film fucking knocks it out of the park. With monster stuff in the walls, man. It's so good. It's a beautiful piece of art. The acting and vibe is always a little unsettling, like I said. But it's stylistically true to its overall vision. And that's why it just makes me happy to see that, you know, it does that. I hope that like Samuel Bodin and the writer Chris Thompson Devlin get more work out of this. This is also another one that was kind of kicked around for a while in Hollywood. Our buddy Paul Davis, who has been on the show a few times, he was up and running for possibly working on this film or directing this film, which would have been pretty cool. So yeah, looks like they were pulling a lot of really good talent trying to get this film together. One interesting thing, there's a little kid. And remember the little kid I told you I knocked over the character Peter with his pumpkin? Wow, I just realized the kid's character's name is Peter, and Peter Pumpkin Eater. Huh. Anyways, he knocks him over, and he's just got this look, right? This little blonde kid, just like, man, what a little shit. This kid just looks like a little jerk. Ends up being Luke Busey. This isn't the son of Jake Busey. No, this is the son of Gary Busey. I think Gary's in his like 70s and he's got like a 9-year-old kid. I thought that was real weird. When I looked it up, I was like, what? Oh my God. But yeah, the little kid's a little shit. And there's one part in the movie where the kid comes back to antagonize to Peter and, you know, beat him up and be the really brutal kid. And he brings like his brothers and like older kids and they all have these Halloween masks on. And our film turns into a house invasion film. But one thing I really love that keeps that like stylistically true fairy tale feeling to this film is that they all keep their Halloween masks on. So, you know, while they're, you know, going around trying to kill whatever attack whatever's happening to them, you never see their faces. You don't want to know why? Because they're not important. They're just cannon fodder for our monster in this movie. So why not have them be wearing really cool Halloween masks walking through this house? I can't recommend Cobweb enough. This movie's so fun and so good. Not to get nerdy on you all and personal, but I wrote a few spec scripts that I used to shell around, giving out to certain people in the Hollywood scene and over at, you know, Universal and try, you know, get my writing out there. Two of my scripts were like Cobweb. If you mash both of my scripts together, it makes Cobweb. And I'm not mad about that by any means. Like, damn, they did it first. That just means they got it. They got like what I want to see in films and pictures 110%. I wrote a script called Decay, and it was about a little boy, and he was kind of like a did you ever see Frankenweenie? Like the original? Oh no, I guess not. What was the It was a Tim Burton story, but it wasn't Frankenweenie. It was I think it was Victor. And he has like the
Victor von Frankenstein look or whatever, like that gothic storytelling. And I kind of, I mixed a little bit of that with Courage the Cowardly Dog's. There's an episode where this blonde guy shows up and he wants to shave Courage. He just has a fetish for like cutting hair. And Courage knows this and he tries to get away at every corner. And the whole episode's told like this fairy tale. Naughty. I'm sure some of you out there know what I'm talking about. But he's telling like this poetry tale of how he's just, you know, he's shaved all these people and cut all their hair and he's coming for Courage, you know, and it just tells so well. And I feel like this film, if it was told, it would be told like a really cool, creepy fairy tale story. And that's just what the director and writer do with this film. They just do such a good job at just building this like fairy tale world. And I feel like the last film that had this kind of feeling was Mike Daugherty's Trick or Treat. Do you know how that kind of film was played out where, you know, you were moving from scene to scene and then you'd get like a story of the background of like the bus driver who drove these kids, you know, off a cliff because the parents didn't like them. Like there was like this is like deep darkness to like the fairy tale world full of kids around Halloween time. Like I feel like that's where this lands. The scares, the horror that they give Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr, the parents, they, oh my God, there's some jump scares that like are pretty unique. A lot of jump scares can be kind of samesies, right? Like, you know, you get your cat jumping out at you or whatever. This film has moments where, you know, it takes you off beat where someone's running at the camera and then they're in the dark and it just stops. And I'm sure you may have seen it in the trailer, but they even change it up after the trailer. So if you've seen the trailer, it still kind of gets you. I cannot say enough good things about Cobweb. Also $19.99 on VOD, rent it now. Yeah. Last Voyage of the Demeter and Cobweb, two of my favorite horror pictures of the year. I know that they're also like films that came out in theaters. They're not like, you know, this little indie, the film that I found off to the side, but damn, these are two really good flicks. And if you want some horror movies to help get you going in the Halloween spirit, I feel like these two films are it. Yeah, I hope you guys really like this episode. I know it's a little different. I figure like a little bit more half an hour kind of like horror movie review kind of episodes might be a little fun before Halloween. I got another episode coming out. I just did the press event for Halloween Horror Nights, where we'll be listing all the houses. My friend Kira went with me, so we'll be talking about those. I'm sure we'll have some more episodes with Jill. I think we're going to do a live episode hopefully soon for the Halloween season. So make sure to check the YouTube and Twitch account. But yeah, lots more spooky podcast episodes to come. Before I head out, I want to play the self-titled album, The Brimstone Fire Club, off the Brimstone Fire Club album from Midnight Syndicate. You can go to midnightsyndicate.com and grab that. Until then, everybody, stay scary. We'll see you in October. Have a good one.